We're going to real quickly review to the point where I think we left off a couple of weeks ago. And we had the beast that came out of the sea. The description that it gives, beginning in chapter 13, verse 1, basically this resembled a leopard but had feet like those of a bear and mouth like a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. Now, remember, we talk about, this is the second, okay? We talk about the dragon who represents who? Okay, the devil or Satan, okay, he's described there. So the dragon has been trying, in the previous part, the dragon was trying to overcome, first of all, stop Christ, and then went after the church, and we couldn't stop the church, he's going after individuals. Now we see this beast that comes up out of the sea, and in that discussion, as we were looking at, we look at the seven heads, we look at the horns, and what do we say all of that most likely represents? This beast here represents who or what? Anybody recall? Do what? The government. Powers, the powers of governments and so forth that are opposed to God and trying to stop Christianity and so forth. Now, we have the description, things there. Now this one, I saw on his head as if it had been slain, one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. So there was an injury to one of the heads of this beast, okay, but then it was healed. Right? So the beast is able to continue on. He's given power to make war against the saints and to conquer them. He was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life, the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So in other words, all those who are not Christians are worshiping this beast. Okay? Now, there's another beast. And I don't recall, did we get to this part last time? Did we talk about this beast? Look at the description of this particular beast as it comes up. And let me see here. I've got to go back. I'm having a hard time. I'm going to have to get me another giant print Bible here. Verse 11, then I saw another beast coming out of the earth who had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. He performed great and miraculous signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of men. Because of the signs, let me see, here's his description here, all right. He exercised all the authority of the first beast and required all the earth and his people to worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been healed. Look at this particular one, 13 and 14. He doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So the key word in this particular part is deceive or deception. All right? This particular beast, what does it represent? False religion, basically. The apostate church. All right, you have the image of the Lamb, okay, which basically is the image of what? Or who? Of Christ. Okay? Throughout the scriptures, we read of the Lamb. John points to Jesus, says, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." So the Lamb basically represents Christ or the Messiah. All right? But this Lamb has horns, okay, which represent power, as we said before, okay? But this Lamb is said to be causing people to do what? To worship the first fruits. Okay? He's deceiving many people by miracles and so on. Basically, this particular beast represents false religion. Okay? In other words, those who claim to belong to Christ, but don't really. They look like they do, but in actuality, they don't. Okay? Jesus warned at one point for us to be on our guard against wolves in sheep's clothing. Okay? And so that's kind of the idea that we have here. Those who are representing themselves as the church, but yet are not following the truth of the Scriptures and are actually leading people away from God instead of to God. Okay? Now, again, as we've been talking about all along, certainly the first century Christians would have understood the problem with, you know, the first beast being the Roman government at the time, okay? And the second beast, this one that looked like a lamb, but it had these horns and so forth, was deceiving people, would have understood that very easily as false religion. We've seen and talked about already the warnings that Paul gave concerning those who would come and be teaching false doctrines. By the time these things were written, John had already written his letters. And in those letters, I'm talking about 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, had already written about the problem of agnosticism. Okay, so that was already going on. False religion, false teaching, and so forth. They were already aware of those things happening. Okay? So they would have understood it that way back then. How about today? We have a problem with the first beast today.
Yes.
That being, you know, government powers and so forth that are doing everything they can to stop Christianity. It's certainly happening here in America today. And we've talked about already how it's happening in other parts of the world where Christianity basically is just outlawed, period. Okay? But it's happening more and more here in America. The second beast is very visible even in America today, where you have many denominations that are showing themselves to be more faithful to the government than they are to the Lord Jesus Christ. Okay? Many of the things that they are doing and teaching and supporting, they're not teaching the truth. They're not standing on the truth. But they are more in line with the government and what the government is trying to do than they are in line with the gospel of Jesus. So again, this just goes to illustrate how, you know, this is applicable not just to the folks of the first century, but it's very applicable to us today. Okay? A warning about those in false religion. You go back to where we were discussing where John was given the measuring rod to measure the temple and the altar. Remember, we discussed all of that, but he was not to measure what? The outer court. The outer court represented what? Those who looked like they belonged to the church, but they really did not. Okay? So we see that same theme that is continuing on through this particular part of it here. All right? Any comments, questions?
Could the third beast also be compared to what Jesus called the Antichrist?
Yes.
That's what
Yes. In the general sense of those, again, the false teachers and those who are leading people astray in the name of Christ and in the name of Christianity and so forth.
Well, you also make the statement, you know, if they say, you know, I've seen Christ here or there, don't go there.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Don't even participate in that.
Right. Okay. Now, in verses 13 and 13 or 15 rather through 18, this particular beast is forcing everyone. I had changed that. Okay. He forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on his right hand that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the number of the beast, which is the name of the beast or the number of this name. Okay? So there is, that is referred to, people talk about the mark of the beast. Okay? What is it? 666. What does that number really represent? Go back to your symbolism that we talked about, the symbol of numbers. Okay? It's incomplete. Not only is it incomplete, but it falls one short. Seven is perfection. Okay? Six falls one short. Remember in the description of those numbers, we talked about how it strives for it, but it always comes up short. Okay? And so it has been then designated as the mark of the beast. The thing we have to keep in mind about this, that mark is on those folks. And look at what he says. Let's see, here we go to verse 16. He also forced everyone, great and small, rich and poor, we just said, to have this mark on the right hand or on his forehead so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. Okay? So, everyone who has this mark, okay, is able to function in the world freely. Those who do not have the mark are not able to. Who doesn't have the mark? Do what? Yes, we ins, us ins, Christians. Those who belong to Christ have his mark, his seal. Okay. Anne, you have your hand up, Mom?
Yeah, I was thinking when that day comes, we're all going to be rushing around to people that we love and care about and trying to get them not to take the mark. That's going to be such a desperate day.
Be desperate times. Yes. Mm. Desperate, desperate times. Okay. No one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Total control by the government. Again, this was true in the first century. And we're moving closer and closer to, you know, these times in the world. Scary? Doesn't need to be. Because of what we're going to read in the next part. Okay? Remember, as you read these kinds of things, go back and remember the theme and what the purpose of Revelation is. Okay? Things are bad. They're going to get worse.
But
the victory is assured in the end. Okay? And these things are here to encourage God's people not to give up in the face of the opposition that they / we will face. Okay. Because if you give up, then this is what you have, okay? If you hold true, you don't have to worry about this. All right? Everybody got that? The last thing that he says here in this particular part, verse 18, is that, again, that encouragement. This calls for wisdom. If anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast, for it is man's number. His number is 666. Okay? So again, it's that warning and that giving encouragement. Don't fall into this category here. This is not where you want to be. Okay? Then we move on, let's see if we got this here, to chapter 14. Okay? Chapter 14 has a couple of things that are going to be happening here. Number one, we're going to talk about a new song that those who belong to the Lord have. We're going to talk about three angels and the announcements of the things that they are doing, and then another call for endurance. All right? Let me get somebody, if you would, to read beginning in verse 1 down to verse 5. All right?
And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his Father's name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder, and I heard the voice of harping with the harps, and a song, as it were, a new song before the throne, and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. And these are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goes. These were the redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and unto the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God.
Okay. We've got how many? 144,000. Now, it's just talking here about the 144,000. Remember, back in chapter 7, we saw 144,000 specifically of who? Of Israel. Okay? And then the next thing it said was, after that I looked and saw a great multitude that no one could count. Okay? From where? From every nation under heaven, right? And so there, when we were looking at that, we saw that basically that represents who? Okay? We've got the 144,000 of Israel that represents all of Israel that would be saved, right? The complete number, not literally 144,000, but the complete number. And then the great multitude represents all of those who are Gentiles, okay, who are not Israelites, all right, who are amongst the saved, right? Well, here we just have the 144,000. There's nothing said of the great multitude, right? So does that mean that this is only talking about the Jews? I don't think so. I think, again, you look at the symbolism of numbers and you see the 144,000, which represents the complete number of all of those who are saved. Again, go back and look at what he says. They are standing on Mount Zion, the 144,000, who had his name and his Father's name written on their foreheads. Okay, you see the importance of the seal and so forth, okay? The name written. In the previous chapter, we just got finished talking about those who had the mark of the beast. Where was it written? On their hand or their forehead, okay? So basically what's happening is each side, if you will, okay, is claiming their possessions, all right? They're putting their identifying mark on those who belong to them. Okay, just like, you know, you might put your identifying mark, your, you know, some kind of a number or mark on something that belongs to you. That's what each of these are doing. God's doing it and Satan's doing it. Okay? identifying those who belong to each one. All right? Now, he goes on to talk about this new song that is being sung. We're going to talk more about that later. Okay, we'll see that more about the new song in as we get later on in the study. But they have this new song that they sang before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. The next statement on here, notice that he says no one could learn the song except the 144,000, or that is those who belong to the Lord, right? Okay, no one could learn that. And he identifies them clearly as those who had been redeemed from the earth. All right, so this is talking about those who belong to the Lord. Is who Jesus, who John is seeing here. All right, any question there at all? Okay. Let's take just for a moment, looking at this this next statement here, and let's notice something I think that's very important, very significant here. Help out with another part of the study also, okay, in terms of in the story of Noah. Verse 4, he says, these are those who did not defile themselves with women, for they kept themselves pure. All right, now, what does that mean? That mean because I'm married and I have a wife that I don't get to be amongst the number because I've been defiled by a woman?
You rejected the sixth of six.
Okay, all right. Let's take a look over in Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Somebody read that for us, please. This hopefully will answer a question that a lot of people have had about this particular text in Genesis chapter 6. What does it really mean? Okay, because there are those who will claim, as this text says here, when men began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful and they married any of them they chose. Now, there are those who say, well, this is talking about the angels, okay, marrying humans, all right? It's not what it's talking about, all right? You laugh about it. That's people that are actually teaching that, that believe that's what this is saying, and it's a big, theological issue for a lot of folks. In fact, in the latest New International Version that I have on my computer, I changed it on here when I inserted in there where it says when men, it actually says when human beings. Okay? And then down at the bottom, the later part, it says the sons of God saw that the daughters of human beings were beautiful, is what it actually says. So they translated that to support that doctrine that this is talking about the sons of God is referring to angels and the daughters of men as human beings. That's not what it's talking about here. Okay, Stephen?
I have never read anywhere where you refer to angels as sons of God.
Yeah.
I thought they were created, but
right. But they are spiritual beings. Jesus makes it very clear, I think, when he is asked in the story of the question he is asked about the man who died and left no sons, but he had seven brothers, and each one married his wife, and none of them had any children. And so in the resurrection, whose wife will she be? And how did Jesus answer that question? Do you remember?
Neither.
Yeah, he said, well, he basically says, first of all, you err because you don't know the scriptures and the power of God. But he also said, in the resurrection, you will be like the angels. Neither marrying nor giving in marriage. All right? So this whole idea of angels coming down and marrying human beings and so forth, that is not what this is talking about at all in Genesis chapter 6. All right? But it does give us some insight into what John is seeing in this part of Revelation. Does it not?
Yeah.
Say, because again, what is happening here? In Genesis chapter 6, what we're finding here is, okay, who are the sons of God that it's that's talking about in Genesis 6?
Those who follow God.
Those who are following God, or the ways of Seth. Okay, who are the daughters of men?
Those who don't follow God.
Those who are following the ways of Cain. Okay, that's basically what it's referring to. All right? And so those who basically, and then this is all in the story of who? Genesis chapter 6?
Noah.
Okay? So what happens in the story of Noah? Yeah, everybody except those who are faithful to God, 8 people, right? Okay? Why? Because as a result of this kind of, you know, intermingling and, you know, those who are following God with those who are not, and again, if you go back and you look at the law of Moses, one of the requirements that God gave to the Israelite people was not to do what? Don't intermarry with these foreign people. Why? Because they, exactly, they were idol worshippers, and they will draw you away from God.
Okay?
Exactly, you say. So, you know, this is really what it's talking about, is the corruption that comes as a result of intermarrying and being influenced by those who are of the world. Okay? And so he's basically showing, okay, a difference between those who have the mark of the beast, those who are of the world, and then those who belong to the Lord, those who are redeemed ones, they have not been corrupted by the world. All right? Ray?
As God teaches that we should not marry, we should marry within the family.
Right.
You know, we shouldn't, even today, we're not supposed to, what has happened when we have a marriage where one is a Christian and one is not. But God also teaches them that we should try to conduct ourselves in a way that we can win them over.
Right.
And they will be added to the body. Right. But that's not, that hasn't changed.
Right. Oh, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
As Denise said, you know, Paul talks about not yoking ourselves with unbelievers. Why? Because you have a chance of being pulled away from the Lord because of that. Chuck, do you have a comment?
And there was a command to not touch the church.
Dale?
Revelation is not specifically talking about that. It's using that as a metaphor.
Right. Symbolism. And it's a warning at how easily people can be pulled away from the Lord. So, again, you have to be diligent. All right? That's part of the point here. Don't give up. No matter how discouraging it gets and whatever, don't allow yourself to be pulled into the world. Okay? So, now we go on, and we have 3 angels that we're going to be hearing from. John sees messages and hears messages from these 3 angels. Beginning in verse 6, he says, I saw another angel flying in midair, and he had the eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He said in a loud voice, fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and the springs of water. So, again, here is this angel comes and is encouraging who? Everyone. Notice that he says here, for to every nation, tribe, language, and people. So this, in a sense, it seems to be as a final call, okay, for anyone and everyone, because you don't want to face what's getting ready to happen if you don't belong to the Lord, all right? What he's getting ready to show John here is the judgment. It's some bad stuff. And so this is a warning by this angel that this is getting ready to come. And so you need to take the opportunity now, because this is your last opportunity, basically, is what the picture that I see here. All right? This is your last opportunity to give yourself to the Lord and to worship Him. Because immediately following that, a second angel follows and says, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great," which represents who? When you read about Babylon in the Bible, what comes to mind?
Sinfulness.
Okay, sinfulness of the worst kind. Okay, evil of the worst kind. Right? And it has fallen, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of her adulteries. All right, so Babylon, which is the evilness of the world, is fallen. It's been overtaken. And all of its influence that it had upon the world, okay, is taken away because it has fallen. All right, then we have another angel. The third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast and his image, and receives his mark on the forehead or on his hand," okay, what is going to happen? "He too will drink the wine of God's wrath and his fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath." Okay? So, as I said, bad things are getting ready to happen, but they're getting ready to happen to who? And this is the part you've got to keep in mind. Who are these bad things getting ready to happen to?
To the non-believers.
To those who don't belong to God, but rather belong to the beast. Okay? So where does that leave those who belong to Him?
Safe and secure.
Safe and secure in Him. Okay? Safe and secure. But again, this is a dire warning to those who do not belong to Him. They are going to face, how much of God's wrath does He say here?
All of it.
A full strength. So in other words, He ain't holding nothing back when the time comes. You don't want to be outside of Christ.
Amen.
All right? Because bad things are getting ready to happen. He says he will be tormented. That is, those who don't belong to the Lord will be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Tormented. And the smoke of their torment rises. Okay. It arises or ascends on that. This part here says, for how long?
Forever and ever.
It will never end. So the torment that they face will be eternal. And it's important for us to know that. It's important for us to be able to tell other people that, because of something we had studied way back a while ago. We were talking about the fact that there are a lot of people in the world today who don't believe that there even is a hell, that it doesn't exist. Okay? It does exist. Okay? And it's going to be a terrible place to spend eternity. As he is describing here, their torment will rise forever and ever. There is no rest day or day or night for those who worship the beast and his image, or for anyone who receives the mark of his name. It will never end. There's no place that you can get some relief, even a little bit, from him, or from this torment. Remember in the story that Jesus tells of the rich man and Lazarus. Okay, what does the rich man request of Abraham? Yeah, please, I need some relief here, okay, is really what he's saying, all right? But the response is what? Great gulf that is fixed between the two, and you cannot pass from one side or the other. Okay, Dale?
Question. First angel, angels represent messengers.
Right. Well, I think that it happened at least once because the Apostle Paul said it had happened, in his day, that the gospel had been preached through everywhere. But I think that's something like these things that needs to continue happening in each generation. I take this as being you go back and you look at several different things that the scriptures talk about. Look at what Peter says about the coming of the Lord, which is talking about these events, right? And that we should, as God's people, look forward to that day and speed its coming. We've talked about that before. Well, what does that mean, speed its coming? How can we speed the coming of the Lord? By teaching the word to everyone we have opportunity to, okay? So that men are without excuse. And that's our job. Now, has that been done? Only God knows that, okay? As to whether every person around has had the opportunity. You've heard me talk about before, my belief on this is, people talk about when's the Lord coming back again. I'm convinced, and I'm not like the Pope who is infallible. Y'all, I'm just joking about
it. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, right. my belief on that is that the Lord will know. He knows when, at what point in time, everyone who is going to be saved is saved.
Amen.
Right? He's the one who knows that. And when that point comes, then there's no reason for him to wait any longer. Okay, nobody else is going to be saved. There's no reason for him not to come. Okay? So, if he hasn't come yet, what does that tell us? There's still people need to be saved. Okay? And that's something we need to be trying to do. Now, this is not, in this text, is not saying that all these people are going to be saved. It's saying he's basically preaching the word, right? They have an opportunity to be saved. To hear the word and be saved. Are there people in the world still today in places that have not heard the gospel? I think there are. And so it may be that that's the reference to that. That will be an opportunity, the last opportunity, for those who hadn't at that point heard the gospel to be able to be saved. Never able to.
But there are still restricted countries.
Oh, sure.
In China and in North Korea.
Yeah.
That's blocked.
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't have access to the scriptures. Very, very limited. Okay. So I think that's what it's referring to, is that last opportunity that God will give everyone. How that is going to take place, I don't know. He doesn't really indicate that. But apparently, people who have not had yet the opportunity to respond will have that last opportunity before all of these bad things happen. Margaret?
Yes. Who would that say that the world was coming to an end in, what day was it, September?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't see the world ain't come to an end.
Right, yeah.
I wonder how they feel now.
Yeah, well.
That's what I mean.
Well, yeah, as we were talking about that a few weeks ago, again, we talked about it a couple of times, you know, that they make these predictions. And again, that's why I've told you, you got to be really careful about not taking these things literally and trying to plug in people and dates and specific events and so forth, because you can easily be led astray as to those things and come to wrong conclusions. I guess they're recalculating. I don't know.
There's usually an excuse. What about people that put up on the mount?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. There have been throughout the ages those who have come and said, you know, the Lord is near, you know, and this time, this is the day, this is when it's all going to happen, and that time has come and gone many, many times, and we're still here.
I guess they're smarter than Jesus.
Yeah. Judy, finish this up here. We're out of time again.
I was going to say, according to still needing to teach, there are still so many people, even in the free world, that have not learned the total picture.
Right.
And I'm going by the way I was. You know, I knew there was God. I knew there was a Son, Jesus Christ. But I had no clue that I needed to become a follower of Christ and the steps that I needed to take to do so. And I dare say there is still, especially in Europe, a lot of people that don't have a complete understanding of this. And I think this still needs, there's still a lot of people out there that would like to be part of God's family, that just need to be brought to a more better understanding of it.
There are still a lot of people who are in churches all over America, all over the world, that are being taught wrong and are following wrong things. They still need to hear the truth of the gospel. And I dare say there are still people within the Lord's church who are not doing what they need to be doing.
Yes.
And we need to be continuing to encourage and admonish and so forth for folks to be following what God's word is and says, so that they don't, you know, end up at the end going, well, but I went to the Church of Christ, you know, all my life. And they end up losing their soul because they haven't been living their life for Christ. So, is there still work to be done?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Okay, thank you all very much. We'll pick up here next week. All right.